Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, it's the Brothers of Destruction finally squaring off after their really fucked up childhood.
Right. Yeah. If anybody thinks they got it bad, just look at these two.
Yeah. It's sad, but it could happen to anyone, Jeff.
Hey, you know what? I would hope that my mother doesn't have some secret, love child, half brother that I don't know about that was burned in a fire. But that, sometimes that's just the road that life takes you down.
Well, I think the tough thing is, you could just be sitting there doing your job on a Tuesday afternoon, and all of a sudden a guy with a mask and long hair barges in, rips the door off the hinges and confronts you.
Like that, even mimicking real life, that could happen. I've got actually two doors in my office, so it could happen to anybody, and hopefully not. I'm looking forward to a quiet week this week, but we'll see what happens. But we got a big one here, and so this is exciting. Again, we're on the road to Mania, and I'll ask you. Normally ask me. I'm going to ask you, like, why'd you want to cover this one? Why are you feeling this one?
So obviously it's a famous match, right? I mean, famous angle, famous match, prominent at a WrestleMania. There's a lot to cover. And gosh, it was within the last few weeks. I think Bruce Pritchard said this was his favorite storyline ever. Yep. And it's funny. I think it was a Q&A or something. I don't know how the topic came up. And, it's funny, before he answered, I'm thinking, gosh, what's he going to say? I thought he was going to say Savage, Hogan, WrestleMania 5. And then he said this, and I said, oh, that's interesting. So that's why I'm excited for this one. I know you always do a great job of breaking down the storyline standpoint. I feel like I remember a lot of this, but there's probably a lot I forget. So I'm pumped to hear you do that, and then obviously to watch the match. What about you?
Yeah, right along the same lines. I think, I always enjoy anything Undertaker. Of course, like this iteration of Kane was when he truly was terrifying. And so I remember watching this as a kid and thinking, like, this was just, it was real. Like, this is when the Undertaker was still the Undertaker. Still is, but it was real. You didn't know what was happening to me. Like, this is what, trying to recapture some of that. But yeah, it's just, and I'm with you. And no spoilers here. The reviews, well, we're going to talk about them after this one, but the build itself, I'm ready to talk about it. If you are, I say, let's hop right in.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. So Do you like two big ass guys one-on-one, or do you prefer when it's big and small? Because this is just like two giants going at it. What are your general thoughts on that?
As Big E said on a podcast one time, just two meaty men bumping meat. Like, and so this is two big beefy men bumping meat. And so I'm okay with this. I think this was at the time where this was normal. Like, I think from the story worked on this one. So to have these two guys, and here's the thing, like, they do things that a big guy should not be able to do. Like, Undertaker's done it for 30 plus years. Kane too, at this point, we didn't know it was Glenn Jacobs, but necessarily, at least I didn't, but at the time, but this is one that, like, watching them do the things they did and they shouldn't have been doing, I'm perfectly fine with this because they were not out of their element to me.
Well, love it. Let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right, so WrestleMania 14, obviously many of us have a very fond memory of the show, of the venue, Boston, Mass, slammed crowd, big buy rate of 730 buys. This is the Austin era has begun. This is the WWF saying, hey, wait a second here. We're not going to bend over and give in to defeat from WCW, but we're going to punch them in the fucking mouth. And that's really what I think this show did. And I think it's a very important show. You could argue it's the most important show in the history of the company because, again, we've got Tyson involved. we're building up Austin, we're putting him over, and the momentum is about to shift. And I think, you know, Eric Bischoff has even said, you know, in my words, not his, they knew they were fucked at this point. They knew it was only a matter of time. Vince McMahon is not a loser. He demands to win. And, you know, again, this was them fighting back. Remember, this is not long after Bret Hart leaves the company. So you're thinking, gosh, they have no money to pay this guy. They're screwed. They're losing their biggest heel. They may have lost their WrestleMania main event, which, I'm assuming at one point was supposed to be the Hart-Austin rematch. So anyways, going on here. The
card
it starts off with this tag team battle royal. We have the debut of LOD 2000. So that's Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal, with a little bit of an upgraded gimmick. They're accompanied by Sunny. So brand new packaging, brand new look. I loved it. I thought it was really cool. I remember them coming out last for this battle royal, and I'm like, this shit's kind of good. So that would give them the number one contender for the tag team championship. Taku Michinoku, 5-minute match. He's going to defeat Agula, probably pronouncing that wrong, to retain his light heavyweight championship. This was, again, as you remember, the not so great attempt at competing with the WCW cruiserweights. That's one area WCW always did better in. Triple H is going to keep his European championship by defeating Owen Hart in a 12-minute match. Mark Mero and Sable in a mixed tag are going to defeat Goldust and Luna. I remember that being a fun match. Sable hits her power bomb. Remember at this time, Sable is over big time. So when she hits that power bomb, place goes nuts. So it was really good. The Rock, who is accompanied by his Nation of Domination friends, is going to defeat Ken Shamrock by DQ. 4-minute match.
I don't remember it being that short. It just feels very short.
I mean, 4 minutes is nothing. And it's, again, this is your second most important championship. It's WrestleMania. Obviously, these two are great athletes. I mean, this could have been a great 15-minute match, but instead we just get a little blow-off DQ. We shouldn't be having DQs at WrestleMania. Now, this was a fun feud match. This actually may be one we want to cover, this particular match. I know we've covered their cage match, but Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie are going to defeat the New Age Outlaws to become tag champions in a dumpster match. Just a fun 10-minute match. Then our semi-main event, and gosh, I didn't remember them going 17 minutes, but The Undertaker and Kane, and then the main event, 20-minute match. Mike Tyson is your special outside enforcer for Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. And, you know, not the best effort given Shawn's back. Obviously, we need to cover that match, but, a lot going on there. So quickly, you know, and I can sprinkle some of this in during the match, but there was a lot of stuff happening in the business. You know, again, I said this turning point, Raw really started creeping up in the ratings. And again, there's 10 million people watching wrestling at this point, but it was starting. And I'll tell you this, between Nitro, Raw and Thunder, you had 10 of the 15, top hours of cable, which is pretty insane. So again, a lot of stuff happening, the momentum shifting. Steve Austin's the reason people ordered this show, but this Kane Undertaker thing, it definitely made a difference, and it definitely was something people were talking about leading into it. So storyline standpoint, I know there's a lot there. How do we get to this match?
Yeah, and this is just good stuff. So you had, at the time, Glenn Jacobs, his last TV appearance, because this was just post his, fake Diesel era. His last TV appearance was Royal Rumble 1997. And so, you know, a year, 14, 15 months before this one. He would occasionally do some live events as Diesel, but for the most part, that character was done. So as Tom and I alluded to here at the beginning a little bit, you had May 1997. So we're just over, just shy of a year from this Mania. You have Paul Bearer, telling the Undertaker that he was going to reveal his deepest, darkest secret to the world. This was it led to the Boiler Room Brawl between Mankind and Undertaker. That was SummerSlam as well, too. So at the time, Paul Bearer was actually with Mankind. And so that's why I've kind of Paul Bearer going against Undertaker. So or where the kind of switch made. So, of course, and here's the straight up storyline was a pallbearer accused the Undertaker of having burned down the family funeral home business when he was a child, killing his parents and his younger brother as well. The Undertaker, of course, denying all
Jeff,
this.
You know, do you know if they had any insurance on that?
Oh, I would hope, you know, yeah, a business too. like that would be terrible. Like, well, that boils down to, you know, who owned it. I you always think like Paul Bearer. So I would hope had it, but like, you never know. So kind of like the Wyatt compound, you hope that they got, or the Hardy compound and all that, the Wyatt, whatever the hell it is, like, you know, insurance. But so Paul Bearer claiming he had proof in the form of the Undertaker's alive and well known, or just perfectly healthy half brother Kane, who had survived, even though he was scarred and burned. He actually institutionalized him at that point. And so that's what kind of led to him being a little crazy, which makes sense from the storyline point. But, and then since the fire, Kane, he had been waiting to exact vengeance on his older half brother. And that, you know, Undertaker in response said that Kane was a pyromaniac and he had been the one to set the fire and there's no way he could have survived. Remember, too, at this point, we hadn't seen Kane, so we don't know what Kane is. All we know is that, you know, Paul Bearer and Undertaker are selling this story at this point. So you actually had, again, at being added to this story was, you know, he'd be calling him his brother, but the half brother piece of it came in because Paul Bearer said that he was actually having an affair with the Undertaker's mother, and so that is why he was his half brother. I guess that would make Paul Bearer his baby daddy. I don't even know. And so not his stepdad, but I don't know. So, I don't know what the technical term there would be, but, you know, it was, you know, of course, so he had that point. And so, you know, that, you know, Undertaker and adding just another layer to us, the thought that it was Kane was his, you know, complete full brother, but now it's his, you know, half brother. So, you know, with this too, kind of the storyline playing into a little bit after here that, you had Undertaker actually, it was SummerSlam 1997, it was a new rivalry at the time. You had special guest referee Shawn Michaels hitting the Undertaker with a steel chair. It was actually intended for Bret Hart. And that match it ended up costing the Undertaker the WWF Championship. And so that actually led into, so while this kind of Kane storyline is going on and we don't know who Kane is, that was the kind of, we've talked about this one. That was the start of Michaels and the Undertaker having their feud, which led to, of course, the Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood. Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood in Your House, October 1997. This is when you get the debut of Kane. And as Tom said, ripping off the door of the cell, you know, giving the Undertaker the Tombstone Piledriver his own move, and which led to Michaels pinning him in that Hell in a Cell match. We've covered that. Go back into the archives. Great match. One that you should definitely kind of listen to what we talked about. So, kind of getting through this, you had Kane, you know, challenging the Undertaker, but, you know, the Undertaker kind of refusing all that stuff. This was the Michaels feud kind of ended. It was actually at Royal Rumble, January 1998. So then you've got a little bit with the Generation X and like kind of who was pairing up. It looked like Kane was going to pair up with the Undertaker, but then turned on him as well too. Just a lot of, you know, weird things happening. And so you've got all this. And so, and this was a casket match at the time that occurred. And so this was on a Raw. And then the casket lid open and the Undertaker is gone. And so you've actually got the Undertaker away for a little bit, you know, didn't want to fight his brother, didn't want to be a part of this. To kind of lead up to this, you have March 2nd. So we're just, you know, not too far out from the actual WrestleMania. Paul Bearer calling for a 10 bell salute because the Undertaker is dead. The bells continue and then you get the lights go out. The casket shows up on the stage. Lightning strikes the casket. The Undertaker's in it. Undertaker sits up. I went back and rewatched this one. I would suggest to anyone, this is, and I have it in my notes here, I think Tom can see it. Every single fan was on their feet for this promo. It was absolutely incredible, the return of the Undertaker on this one. It's something that you don't see anymore, which you and I can talk about during the match. No microphone. He was cutting the promo without a microphone, yelling, like just the fans were, it was, I highly recommend everybody go back and watch this promo when The Undertaker returns. Cut a great promo talking about how he had been through hell, that his parents had pretty much given him permission to fight The Undertaker and to, redeem them, I guess, if you will, or avenge them and fight Kane. And so you had a little bit of Supernatural at this point. You had, lightning strikes and things like that, kind of, of course you had hitting the casket, you had it hitting the Titantron at the time. Of course, we all remember that the stylized name of the big screen that they used to have, just not a thing anymore, but that's what it is. And so getting permission from his parents in hell, which is how every match should start nowadays. You have The Undertaker then allowed to take on Kane at WrestleMania 14. So just a lot of stuff. Like it was very interesting how it played out. A lot of happening, but really you don't see Kane in the ring even a lot until like this match, and it all leading up to this match. And so really good story, really good things happening. I know I feels like I breezed through it real quick, but it like actually happening in the moment, it was fantastic.
Well,
Tom, what do you got? Yeah.
This is, it's so rare, but you get the big build, you kind of keep them away from each other. There's not a bunch of matches and, stuff in between. It was paced really well. The crazy thing about this, Jeff, is you're talking Hell in a Cell in October. This is in March.
Yep. Late March. Yep.
It's a 6-month build.
Yeah, at least. Yeah, exactly. And so to get that and then to build it up to when for half it, we didn't even see Kane.
Exactly.
So to get to that point, that I'm ready to watch. If you're ready, let's give them the timestamp and let's do this.
Hour 46, WrestleMania 14. That's an hour 46, WrestleMania 14. Jeff, are you ready?
Oh, man, I am ready. Let's do it.
Man, you're stoked.
Stoked. I told you before, I'm pumped for this one. I'm ready to watch.
You're either going to love it or you're going to be disappointed. I don't know. So
I don't either, but we'll find out.
It's time to hit play and get ready for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
Taker's looking money, huh?
Oh, boy. He's got the huge cowl in the back of the jacket that he's wearing. And then Kane, standing across. This is the full mask. I think this is probably when Glenn Jacobs still had his hair, too. So he got a little bit of the long hair, kind of playing that up. But yeah, and just both guys now staring each other down, center of the ring. I guess the iconic photo, just right looking there. The camera flash is going off. Yeah, just fantastic. Like, what a build. Got giant, just absolute giants in the ring, like you talked about. Oh, and one punch and Kane just absorbing it. Wow.
You forget too, and you mentioned it earlier, you forget how good of an athlete Glenn Jacobs was. I mean, he comes back now and God love him, but now it's like, he's a mayor, he's retired. I mean, it's not like the guy's spending 3 hours a week in the gym or 3 hours a day in the gym, right? But at this point, I mean, he's fast as hell. He can do a ton of stuff. He's jacked up. I mean, he looks
like bigger than The Undertaker.
Yeah, like, I don't remember. Remember, they had him in like platform shoes at one point. Try and look at his shoes and see if he actually wrestled in them. I know when he debuted, they had like a couple inches below his boots to make him look taller. But I can't remember at this point. If you look at like his heels, gosh, it looks like he's got some like big boots, like lifts.
There's a little bit on there. Yeah. And I'm talking not even just like down, like his trunk, like he's got a bigger like, his chest and stuff looks bigger than The Undertaker in this moment. Yeah. And so, you got to remember up to this point, like Glenn Jacobs, quote unquote, had really been, he was wrestling as Diesel, to kind of show that like, he was wrestling as someone else. So to give him this character, I'd love to, I'm sure it's out there. I just didn't really kind of look into it, but like, that pitch, putting Kane out there saying, hey, we're going to put you with Paul Bearer. Like, we're going to build you as the Undertaker's half brother, who's just as like even more terrifying and can do the same thing. Like, and then really him coming from all the characters he had to then getting Kane and making it what it was. Like this is, I go back to Steven Regal talking about it like forever ago, or maybe it was Austin or someone. Like, not only do you have to own your character, but if you're not willing to reinvent yourself, you're not going to make it in this business. And he is one that absolutely reinvented himself to give us this. Yeah.
They're moving very quickly.
Yes.
And like I say, that's a good thing. I mean, it's not like this is like some lumbering big man match. It's just two big guys, but they're, I mean, it looks good.
You got Undertaker really, kind of jumping into the turnbuckles. Yeah. To take the spots.
Yeah. We, you know, we really weren't sure what we were getting from Kane as far as like what he'd look like as a wrestler. I'm almost positive that the Royal Rumble of this year, Kane was in there as Fake Diesel. I'm pretty sure, you know, that flamed out not long after, but just crazy to start the year as Fake Diesel. Oh my goodness. What a move. To start the year off as Fake Diesel and then end it, you know, or a year later, 12 months later, to be in the semi-main event of WrestleMania with a gimmick that was awesome and a great storyline and a gimmick that, I mean, you'd still be coming back and doing. Oh, let's see here, 23 years later.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking to see here. I'll kind of pull up that list to double check that on you. But so we got Paul Bearer ringside here. Greatest WWE managers of all time. Who's on your list?
You know, as far as a manager, I'm a huge Bobby Heenan fan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, absolutely.
I hated the guy, but I thought Cornette was great as a spokesman and a manager. Yep. I thought he was really, really good. You know, I mean, for like 80s cheesy WWF, Jimmy Hart was awesome. And, you know, with the megaphones and the different outfits, yep. Love that one. Gosh, you know, you can argue the greatest manager in the history of the WWE is Paul Heyman.
Right. Yeah.
You know, when you look at those promos and what he's able to do. And, I mean, the guy, you know, I would have loved, you know, we never really got it with Paul Heyman. Remember for like a minute when he was, yeah, I know, wasn't expecting that. Almost like an electric chair. Is that what they call that move?
Yeah. Undertaker was on the shoulders of Kane. Yikes. Okay. Yeah,
he just dropped him. It was great. I mean, it was awesome. So, but Heyman, the one thing I would have loved to see Heyman, remember they put him with like Curtis Axel for a minute?
Yes.
I would have loved to have given him a stable of younger guys that he could have gotten over because, you know, as much as I love Punk, Lesnar, Reigns, I mean, all three were already made men. Not that Heyman wasn't great with them, but give me, you know, like I'd love to see just him with a Curtis Axel and a, you know, a DiBiase Jr. and a Davey Boy Jr., you know,
yep.
I don't know, something like that where he could lead that. I just think that would be a lot of fun. But the mindset you could put Heyman with anybody, it would make him a star.
Well, and that's why I think Roman's going over as well as he is right now. I think that the different characters working, but then also like Heyman with him is just, it's selling the shit out of it. Like you can't go wrong.
Heyman with him is great, but let's be honest here. You could have turned Reigns heel a few years ago and it would have been great too.
Yeah. I mean, I think they never pulled the trigger on it. Yeah.
No. I think the Heyman thing adds another element that's absolutely better, but I think you could have turned Reigns heel 3-4 years ago. Could have turned him heel the night after he beat Undertaker at WrestleMania. And, you know, I never gave a shit about you fans. You know, I don't care that this old man's legacy is over. And there you go. He would have been, you know, he would have been drawing money for you years ago versus, you know, the stupid babyface stuff that they have been wasting his talents on.
Yeah. I'm with you on Bobby the Brain. I think I think Paul Bearer especially too, you gotta have him on that list as one of the ones that just, you know, just absolutely fantastic. I think that the little lesser talked about one that I have to like, you know, manager, valet, whatever you want to call him, but like Sensational Sherry, Miss Elizabeth. I think you can't overlook, even Selena Vega recently did a really good job. It helps. I it's very hard to find, you know, say a quote bad manager if they're adding to the character, which Paul Bearer, you know, arguably, you know, absolutely, you know,
Sherry Martel is one of the most underrated talents in wrestling.
Yeah,
she was incredible.
Yeah, like
go look at her stuff. Go look at her stuff with Sean. Go look at her stuff with Harlem Heat. The Macho King stuff. I mean, every step of the way, she was just incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of see some of that stuff. And again, you know, and we'll talk a little bit more what happened, you know, with Paul Bearer after this, still around, kind of hang, you know, or the aftermath on this. But yeah, so these guys, it hasn't been, so we had a spot on the outside with the steel steps with the distracted ref. Undertaker kind of blocking like a boxer at this point, trying to get Kane off. I'd say Kane is not dominating, but he is definitely got the momentum here over the Undertaker. In kind of this match right now.
It's funny what we forget about with the Undertaker's legacy is how many shitty WrestleMania matches he had. So,
yeah.
Chokeslam there. Obviously not going to be enough. But, you know, we forget, I mean, the guy had to wrestle Giant Gonzalez. He had the tag or the handicap match with Big Show and Prince Albert. Okay. He had the Big Boss Man Hell in a Cell match that sucked. That was the year after this. There's others too, you know, just really bad WrestleMania matches. So obviously this wasn't, but I mean, the year he wrestled Flair, they almost didn't have anything for him. And I think there were like two guys that were like, hey, pick one. And he picked Flair and had a classic. But, you know, it's just weird that, you know, there were a lot of years where Taker was either in lousy programs or not in good WrestleMania matches. It wasn't like every year this guy was Mr. WrestleMania. Obviously, that changed over time. But this is way before the streak or before, you know, Taker was a, you know, guaranteed to have a great WrestleMania match.
Well, yeah, and obviously they didn't, you know, do I wish the streak ended? No, but, you know, whatever. It's happened. It's done at this point. But yeah, I'm with you. Like that first WrestleMania was what? Superfly. And so I'm sure at the time they weren't thinking, yeah, even the thing, he'll go 10-0 or something like that, or we're just never going to have him lose, like to get where they got. But yeah, then we all forget about that. There's some real stinkers in there too. Like the streak went on, but some years it was a little bit easier than others. And I don't remember exactly when they started pushing the streak.
I am almost positive they started acknowledging the streak against Edge at WrestleMania 23 in Orlando.
Okay. Or 24. Yeah, 24.
Yeah, I'm almost positive it was the Edge match. I could be wrong. They may have acknowledged it a year prior, and it was, gosh, I could be way off with that. Maybe I'm thinking of Edge because Edge was 10-0 at that point or something. He was also undefeated going to that match. They made it about the streak, but gosh, yeah. It was, you know, no. There was a year, and I'm way off now. There was a year where he went and he counted to 10 and went like this, and he was 10-0. And perhaps that was against Flair or against Triple H, so like 17 or 18 maybe. I'm pretty sure now that I think about it, that's when it was. But I think there was one year where he counted and it was 10-0, and it may have been after he beat Flair.
Yeah, and so I'm looking right now. They're saying this is just kind of a quick note on the streak of that they 22. They initially wanted Mark Henry to beat him, and that everybody was against that, and they weren't a fan of that. Yeah, it was streak versus streak, and I remember this. I think was in the last ride too. They talked a bit of this, or maybe it was like an Edge one, but Edge refused to break the streak. So he had turned, and yeah, that was 24 at that point. That put him at 16-0. And kind of having that. So yeah, it's just, and then it's weird too, because then that's 25, like, you know, it getting into it. So yeah, there's just a lot, you know, there's Shawn Michaels, that was that match. And so, yeah, while there was some stinkers, there was also some of the greatest wrestling matches ever too. And so it's just kind of weird how that all played out. So you got a rest. I say a rest hold now, kind of a sleeper hold, and then Undertaker trying to take out Kane. Yep. There you go. I wonder too, at this point, like, you know, this was not a quote. It was almost a 20-minute match, but you wonder when they were going into this, I would have to look and see what was Fake Diesel's longest match before this one and the kind of stamina issues that they were dealing with.
That's a good point too.
And then
that was a pretty long wrestle, huh?
Yeah, so we got Suicide Dive over the top, Undertaker missing, farewell Spanish announce table getting destroyed as Kane stepped out of the way. We haven't asked in a while. Is Undertaker coming back? Are we going to see him again here?
I mean, if I'm betting on it, yeah, he's going to have another match.
Yeah, we catch shit on this. I caught a lot of shit online last time I said that. Yeah, I still I don't think it's not like it, you know, maybe I want to believe and it's rose colored glasses or something like that, but I just don't think that we've seen the last of him. I that itch after as long as he's been doing it, and like they even said, like, you know, if Vince called him and had a good story, I think it would happen. Yeah, I'm happy with how he went out, but I don't think that's to say that he's gone. Yeah,
well, yeah, I mean, the ending, if you will, of Survivor Series, him just standing in the ring in front of an empty arena. You need something better. You know, I could look and you know what it end up might be is it might be he comes out and delivers a tombstone but doesn't wrestle an actual match. But yeah, gosh, I'd love to see an actual match. I mean, I'm always going to cheer for these guys to come back. So
it's funny because go ahead.
I was just saying one of the things that I was reading about is by the way, not every match, but I'd say more often than not, I love going back and reading those PW torches because there's just so much cool stuff. You know, some of it's fun because, you know, Keller and Meltzer thought things were going to happen that didn't. So you kind of laugh about some of those predictions. But it's fun to go back and read those. And, you know, of course, in your mind, you fantasy book a little bit. But, you know, Ric Flair was not on the best of terms with WCW at the time. And so they were speculating, could he end up going to the WWF? And I'm thinking, gosh, you know, how interesting could it have been? And again, remember, this is like Ric Flair still, you know, younger, okay? But how cool would it have been to have Ric Flair in an Attitude Era of WWF?
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, a heel Ric Flair comes in, cuts a promo on Steve Austin, and you get two or three pay-per-view matches out of it. Like, come on, that's money, right? So it would have just been interesting to see again, you know, heel Flair, you know, feuding with DX.
Well, and I wonder, like, and I've said this before, and we're, you know, we're a little ways away here. But
interesting,
like,
how Kane was pinning opponents a different way too.
Yeah, the you know, the Survivor Series kind of captain thing. You gotta tell me they can't get involved. Like, they tried it, and I feel like they just didn't go all in on it, and so it just kind of fizzled out at that point. And so, yeah, I'm with you though. Yeah, absolutely. So now you got Undertaker, kind of a little bit of momentum coming back here at this point. We got not everybody, the crowd. It's just one of those. I feel like I can't hear it, of course, but the crowd.
Yeah,
just,
I'm gonna I'm gonna play the sound real quick so everyone can hear. There's just not that much, Jeff. You're exactly right. I mean, they're not out of it, but they're not in it. Yeah, it's Jeff, I'm wondering if part of the problem is I didn't hate Kane at this time.
Yeah, that could be part of it. Yeah,
you're watching Kane and you're like, you're interested in what's going to happen. You think it's kind of cool. I'm not saying he's a babyface, but I mean, he kind of is, you know what I mean? Like, and if you like really think about it, you're like, this is the guy. All right, here comes a tombstone. Oh God.
Nope. Kane kind of half-ass kick out, but he kicked out. Okay.
He just dropped him on his neck on that tombstone though. So, you know, it's like Kane was almost a baby face, right? Like, I mean, he was like the one that was burned in the childhood stuff. And so,
well, and it's one of those, again, getting him set up again for another two. Oh boy, his head is low. Jeez.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Part of that's just because Kane's just such a big motherfucker. Like, it's got to be hard. One, two. Oh, that's a kind of a seizure kick out. I don't even know what that was. Okay. Paul Bearer selling it again. Like, just such a great manager. Yeah.
Yeah. Kicked out a couple tombstones. I mean, they're going balls to the wall. But again, the crowd's just not into this one.
So before we get to the end here too, I recommend anybody go back and watch the promo when he came back. Why don't they do promos without microphones? Like, he obviously had it wired on him, but why, like, you know, always holding the microphone? I feel like it put me more in the moment having him watch the promo. Why, like, what, I guess the question is, how can they fix promos like that again? It was just,
that's got to be, That's got to be a Vince McMahon thing where he prefers the microphone and he thinks it adds an element or something. Because I agree with you. It's kind of cool without it. All right, well, here we go.
There's another tombstone. And even like, you know, they do all these talk shows and they're holding microphones. But then you got one, two. Did he get it? Yep, there it was. Yep. Right away, Paul Bearer throwing the chair into the ring, though.
So yeah, they're cheering for him, but again, it wasn't like a massive pop. I think the issue is they didn't hate Kane. So
terrible ref bump there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the aftermath and we talk more about this one. So let's jump right into the aftermath.
Oh, it's time for the aftermath.
All right. So initial thoughts there.
It's good. I think that it's not going to win any awards, and the reviews are going to prove that too. I think for, you know, the story that they told and kind of, you know, it didn't end the feud by any means. There was a lot of good stuff though. And it wasn't a shit show. Like they at least looked like they, you know, were okay in the ring together and not a ton of chemistry, but it was early too.
So you still have the match pulled up.
Yes, I'm still watching.
Okay, so do I. And Kane's attacking with a chair. You know, Jeff, I almost wonder if this should have happened at the beginning of the match, right, to get him over as a heel, like Kane came out and attacked him or something. I mean, the problem is that Kane just wasn't over as a heel enough. Like, I just don't think people hated him, and therefore they weren't cheering on The Undertaker to kick his ass.
Well, and in a lot of ways, too, he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't the heel, but he was also just kind of like Paul Bearer's henchman in a way. Like, yeah. You know, he was doing his bidding. And so to, you know, get him over as an individual heel is tough when he's just kind of like the strong man for Paul Bearer and that story right then. So, yes, there was the other stuff, but who knows? But yeah.
Cool. Well, get into the aftermath on this one. I mean, you could spend hours because it like went on for 20 years.
Right. Yeah. I had to cut it off at some point here, but I will say, you know, so this was, you know, of course the rematch, it was this leading into my favorite match of all, or match stipulation of all time, the Inferno match. It was 1 month later. This was Unforgiven, or In Your House Unforgiven. This is the Undertaker winning by setting Kane's arm on fire. Tom and I say it a lot, like, hey, let's make sure to add that match on our list. Don't worry. That match is already on the list. I don't need to double check. I did add the dumpster match too. And so we were always adding to the list and have that, and so at this point too, there was a Hell in a Cell match, King of the Ring, June, just a couple months later, this one with Mankind. This of course is the Hell in a Cell match with Mankind. And so, dealing with that. And of course, Kane kind of coming in and out after that fact as well too. But immediately after this, yeah, they had the rematch, but then you had the Hell in a Cell match. Like, and so, you know, Undertaker, you know, putting that on and things like that. So understandable and okay that Kane was a little bit on the back burner at this one, because then they went and did that. And so they actually had Undertaker and Stone Cold winning the tag team championships. I had forgotten about that. It was very short lived, but Kane and Mankind actually losing them, but then getting them back. And so just a little bit later. And so you also had it was Breakdown In Your House, one that I had forgotten about and wasn't even thinking about, that the Undertaker and Kane, it was a triple threat match with Austin. And so, and there was stipulation that McMahon had said the brothers were not allowed to pin each other. And so you had them pinning Austin together. Yep. Double choke slam. There was no contest. It was just that was a mess. And so, and eventually though, you had the Undertaker. It was actually Judgment Day In Your House. It was the Undertaker and Kane. It's Austin as the special guest referee. You had kind of Paul Bearer, it seemed like he was going to help Kane by handing him a steel chair, but then, they ended up hitting Kane in with the chair and things like that. And so, both men, it was a count, you know, and it just weird, kind of counted them out. But October 1998 was when that show happened. And then the next night on Raw, you had the Undertaker reuniting with Paul Bearer after what had happened at the Judgment Day pay-per-view and saying that him and Paul Bearer would, unleash their ministry of darkness. And so that's where I'm going to decide to cut it at this point, because we could talk about, we get into the ministry on a later day. We've got some of those matches on our stuff. And so we'll get there. But for now, yeah, that's, you know, just they're just always in each other's lives. And of course it did end to put the, just a nice little bow tie into this, that Kane did eventually admit that he indeed set the fire that killed his parents, which Paul Bearer had set the fire, which he initially blamed on Kane. So it's just, you know, a nice little bow on this stuff. You know, it's kind of nice to wrap it up that way. So yeah, good things. So thoughts on the aftermath, get into the reviews. You ready for it?
Jump in the reviews.
So you've got Undertaker was number 5 on the PWI this year. You had Kane was 21. So both guys fairly high on the list. You remember this was earlier in the year, so there was a lot that still happened on this one. The match of the year that year, unfortunately, the bar was just way too high with the Undertaker versus Mankind. And so that was the match of the year. And so it's really hard to compete against that. And so, so the PW Torch review on this one. So you've got Undertaker pinning Kane in 1657. Oh, there was a whole angle with Pete Rose before this too, that we didn't talk about because it really wasn't worth it. And so Boston crowd, things like that. And so so that was actually how they tried to make him a heel, was like the whole Pete Rose angle, but it's Pete Rose. And so that was part of the issue. It dealt with Pete Rose, and like, so that's why he was a little bit cooled. Undertaker's ring entrance was spectacular, with a dozen or so torches being held over him as he made his way to the ring. That's definitely one to go back and watch. It's always great when they see that with the Druids. They begin with a stare down. Kane attacked Undertaker with a chair afterward and tombstoned him on the chair. Undertaker eventually sat up and walked to the back. The long chin lock mid-match killed any momentum, and the pace was too slow as it was. There were some nice spots and a nice finishing sequence, though, and the storyline overall was sound. Gave it 1.25 stars.
Wow.
And so the rest, Undertaker versus Kane, was a basic by the numbers Undertaker match. And so that was the PW Torch. The Wrestling Observer newsletter on this one, again, you've got the whole Pete Rose stuff. The match told the story, but was pretty dull since Kane isn't at the level of being out there that long. Mainly, Kane delivered punishment to Undertaker, who sold most of the way. Kane sold very little of Undertaker's offense, since they are trying to keep him as a monster, and he was doing the job. Match during the body didn't have much heat. After a clothesline off the top, Undertaker hit a third tombstone, but Kane kicked out a second after the 3 count, which left the finish flat. There is nothing that flattens the finish pop more than the loser kicking out just after the 3rd count. Although they want to make it as though the match was over, but that Kane didn't lose. After the match, Paul Bearer attacked Taker, who came back and decked him, allowing Kane to hit Taker with a chair and tombstone on the chair. 1.5 stars. So 1.25 from PW Torch, 1.5 from the Observer newsletter. I'm going to go first on this one. I know sometimes I throw it to you. I think those scores are way too low. I don't think that this by no means was a 10 star, 5 star match to any degree. I think it was perfectly fine. I'm going to give it a 7. I think that it's one that, you know, that, and primarily because the storyline, I think in some ways the storyline outpaced the match, that they had built it up so well. I don't think they even realized what they had on their hands at that point, and that it went over so incredible, like kind of Kane and the character and things like that, that yeah, unless you're making him, I mean, it's kind of like the Fiend, like the reverse Fiend. He was so hot as a character when they got you build up and then the debut, and then they just shit all over him. Like after we've been kind of sitting here talking about it. Yeah. I wonder, like, while they built him up as a monster, they didn't build him up as a heel, which I think hurt in the long run. And so, the aftermath on this one, the build just outpaced it. Like getting to that point, it was just so hot. I think the build was like a 9.5, 10, like it just so great how they got to it. But, you know, yeah, then it really fizzled in the moment. Yeah, the match itself, it was two big guys, but at the same time, yeah, and the rest hold, it what you and I even called out the rest hold in the moment. Like it just, you know, I wasn't that disappointed compared to the quote unquote experts. So I'm going to give it a 7. How about you?
I have it as a five, and the build was excellent. I agree. I think, you know, the two big man thing that was working against them. I think that almost no matter what they did in the ring, it was going to feel like a letdown given how big of a build there was. They did not establish Kane enough as like a bad guy in the scenario. And Jeff, I think they view this as like a, you know, 6 to 9 month storyline. And just like every other guy Undertaker wrestled, like Kamala and Giant Gonzalez, this guy would just be out of the picture and we'd move on. Now, I think if they knew what they were getting in Glenn Jacobs, you know, in terms of the guy and the character and the longevity, I think they just would have had Kane win the match. I think they would have absolutely had him become a monster heel, crush the Undertaker, and go on and have a huge run. But I just don't think they were there with him at the time. So it was just this weird booking where you put Taker over, you don't get Kane over as a heel. The match wasn't that great. You do the BS at the end where, you know, Kane gets some of his heat back. So again, I have it as a five. Because the build was great and, you know, the aftermath had so many interesting things, but this actual match, no need to go back and watch it. Just really nothing special to it. One good spot with the Undertaker dive. Crowd wasn't into it. That's all I got.
I would say watch the promo. That's one. That would be my caveat to this. If you don't want to watch the match, at least go watch the promo for a clinic and how it's supposed to be done by one of the greatest. Yeah.
Agreed. Cool. Good episode. We are on the road to WrestleMania. We got more WrestleMania the next couple of weeks. I'm pumped about it. As always, we're at Payoff Pod everywhere. Appreciate the support. Appreciate the retweets. Love the comments. And we appreciate you listening. So thank you for joining us on an all new episode of The Payoff.